Hi mums and parents, welcome to part two of our three-part allergy series in honour of National Allergy Awareness Week. On today's episode, we're joined by an amazing guest. You know, she was so supportive, or has been very supportive in my own allergy journey. And when I met her and spoke to her and her passion just oozed, I knew I had to have her on the podcast, and you know, she doesn't disappoint. We discuss her experience with allergies. We discuss some confidence boosting tips that she offers for mums and parents of children with allergies. And we discuss all the work she's doing in the area of allergy awareness, amongst other things. So enjoy this episode and I will see you on the next one. Okay, hi mums, welcome back to another episode of the Confident Mum podcast with Olga Uju. I'm so glad that you are joining me again today. I have a wonderful guest on, which I will introduce to you shortly, but this is part two of a three-part series where we are discussing food allergies, and I really encourage you to listen to the first part, is where I went into more detail about my experience as a parent of children with food allergies and the two incidences that have led me to really take this a lot more seriously. Not that I wasn't, but it was just a case where the last incident really frightened me and made me want to form a community where I can meet other parents who have children in a similar situation, and also where we can raise more awareness and just, you know, really find out what information is out there and what else do I need to know. So without further ado, I want to introduce to you today's guest. Her name is Manpreet Azad of Food Allergy Fit. And yeah, hi Manpreet, how are you?
Hi Olga, thank you so much for having me on. I'm really good, thank you.
No, it's great. Thank you for coming on.
So sorry to hear about your, is it your daughter's allergic reaction?
Yes, so she has a nut allergy, egg and fish, which I talked about in a previous episode. But yeah, it was really a frightening experience, and it led me to kind of do my search, and out you popped out. And what I loved about your page and what you're doing is that you're very passionate, and we've obviously spoken prior to this chat we're having now, but it was your passion and your enthusiasm to not only, you know, and make sure that you know what you're doing around your own child, but other parents, schools, everyone that is in the care of preparation of food. So you tell us a bit more about yourself and what you do.
Thank you for that lovely introduction. Thank you so much.
That's fine.
Yeah, as you say, I'm so passionate about this. And, you know, it's not exactly a, you know, sexy subject to be talking about, but it involves my daughter and it involves our lifestyle, and it has such a bigger impact than I think I would have ever expected it to have, and what other people would expect it to have as well. So in terms of that, you know, it affects where we go out to eat, it affects who we socialize with, it affects where we can go on holiday. You know, so lots of things are just, you know, we can't do, but I don't want my daughter to ever miss out on anything. So I am just that kind of parent, which a lot of allergy parents are, where they go over and beyond to make sure that their child isn't missing out. And, you know, they just feel like they want to make up for the things that they probably are like missing out on. But my daughter's still really young, so she doesn't really understand the full extent of things. And obviously there's a lot more options out there, so there's, you know, dairy-free chocolates and nut-free chocolates and treats and stuff. So for her at the moment, she doesn't really understand, but I'm carrying a lot of weight of responsibility to make sure that she is safe. And part of why I set up Food Allergy Fit was because people just didn't understand how serious it was. And for me, that's the part that I found the hardest in terms of managing her allergies. And it's the constant having to explain it. And then people just think that you're maybe being overprotective or overdramatic. Yeah. And even when you say, no, my daughter can't eat milk chocolate, and they still try and give her the milk chocolate, which then causes an anaphylactic reaction, that was the point where I was like, I need to have a voice, and I need people to really know how serious it is. And it's just, I've done a lot of work in psychology, because for me, I just did not understand why people didn't get it. And I was like, when I said to you that this could kill my daughter, and I tried to give it to her, and this is not just one person, this is a number of people, I don't understand. Am I, is it something that I'm saying? Am I not saying it clear enough? And what are those barriers that prevent people from really understanding? And when your child is, you know, not at school and is with you all the time, you can, you know, you can control the environment and the situation. But when they're in someone else's care, things start to get really scary, because you need them to really understand, and you don't want them to be taking risks and going, well, let's try a little bit and see what happens. And that's the really, really scary thing for people within the allergy community, is the fact that they're relying on other people. So other people that work in restaurants, in schools, their friends and family, to really understand, so that they are really careful around that person that has the allergy, and that they don't, you know, intentionally give something that that person's allergic to. So that's the motivation behind me setting up the Allergy Fit. And I have seen a significant impact in my life from doing it, because people are becoming aware, and these people that didn't understand before, and that it's now kind of the pennies, feels like the pennies dropped, and they understand, actually, yes, this is really serious, and we are going to be careful.
And it's life-threatening. Yeah. So it is. Gosh. Before we go delve deeper, let's backtrack, because your situation is slightly different, where you've actually got allergies as well.
Yeah.
Haven't you? So do you want to just talk about that as well, and how that came about?
Yeah.
Just out of interest. Mm-hmm.
I have had two anaphylactic reactions, and the first one was to a general anaesthetic. And there's a really a low risk. It's like 1 in 10,000, I think.
Yeah, I was looking at Allergy UK, and it's like 1 in 10 to 20,000.
Yeah, so I'm always that person. I'm always that person.
It would be you. You're like, great.
And when I woke up, thankfully I did, the anaesthetist said, you know, I frightened the life out of them, and I almost died on the table. And they, you know, there was no other information given, and I didn't, you know, I carried on with my life. I didn't really think anything of it.
So hold on, prior to that moment, had you any idea that you had any form of allergies in any,
Right. And I didn't know even at that point that, you know, that what happened to me was called anaphylaxis. I didn't know, you know, I wasn't given any information as to, okay, what do I need to do anything now? It was just, okay, you know, you're fine, see you later. And so I didn't really think anything of it. And then I had an allergic reaction to mosquito bites, and I ended up in hospital. And they, I was in America, and they wanted to do lots of tests. And they said, we need to MRI scan, and they inject a contrast dye, which is a colored dye, so they can see the blood when they're doing the scan. And I had an anaphylactic reaction to that, so I was awake when this happened, whereas with the general I was asleep and I had no idea. And literally I sneezed, and they said, oh my god, you've just sneezed. I didn't think anything of it, but within what felt like 10-20 seconds, my voice went really hoarse, and I lost my voice, and I could not breathe. So, and I was trying to tell them I can't breathe, and I couldn't breathe, and I fell unconscious, and I literally thought, oh, that's it, game over. I've died. And I woke up, I had an oxygen mask on me. It was still really hard to breathe, and I had all these tubes and things connected to me, and I was just really so traumatized, and nobody had told me what was going on, what happened. And I was discharged with like no information whatsoever. And it was a friend that actually said to me, you know, that's called anaphylaxis, and so, oh my God, that's so dangerous. And that's when I started reading up on it, and I was just so like shocked that, oh my God, this is so dangerous. I almost died. You know, what else could I be allergic to? And I thought, you know, okay, I need to stay away from hospitals and like medicine. So for both of my girls, I had home births, and the doctors would say, you know, there's a chance you could, the same thing could happen was if you were to have an epidural. So I didn't want to be anywhere in that environment where something could be given to me. So I had drug-free births. I did hypnotherapy, and actually I didn't feel anything. So, you know, I was really happy.
Kudos to you. Well done. With your first one as well. Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I think it was just the you know, the fear of being in that environment where...
And your mindset was like, I have to do this.
Exactly, yeah. You know, in terms of food, I'm allergic to shellfish. I've never had an anaphylactic shock from it. I've had IgE symptoms, which is immediate symptoms, but it's never gone into anaphylaxis. But as an adult, it's quite easy for me to avoid shellfish.
Was that discovery in your adulthood, or had you known about that previously?
Yeah, that happened actually after my first anaphylactic shock.
Okay.
And then it got worse after the second one. So after the first one, I couldn't eat prawns, but I could still eat things like crab and lobster. And then after the second one, I couldn't eat those. And I think it just makes, you know, your body more sensitive and react more severely. So every time you have a reaction, it does make things worse for you allergy-wise.
Right. Again, I didn't know that. That's new information again. So the fact that you've experienced that and then your daughter has experienced that, I guess that would increase your anxiety around everything just that bit more, because you know the potential struggles.
Yeah.
And when people say to you, how harmful can it actually be? You tell people like, oh, my daughter has a milk allergy or an egg allergy, and people are like, we'll be careful.
Yeah,
but it doesn't seem to be an absolute kind of right. Okay, have you taken the medicines to school, or have you come equipped with her the EpiPen, or, you know, do we know what to do, or what should we do in a case of a shock? So just for mums listening in, or anyone listening, literally, how harmful are allergens?
Not everybody has the same reactions, but mm-hmm. The potential is it can kill you.
Right.
And the severity of reaction can depend on so many things. And even if you've never had a severe reaction that's gone into anaphylaxis before, that does not predetermine what might happen in the future. And it is a severe... So when I talk about Eva's allergies, and if I'm going to a restaurant, for example...
Mm-hmm.
The way that I talk about it is I say my daughter has severe life threatening food allergies, and even a tiny trace can cause a reaction that can kill her.
So you're just going straight with the disclaimer.
Yeah.
No holding back. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really important that it's even a tiny trace. So it's not to do with the amount that you've consumed. Even a really small amount can cause that severe reaction. Unlike an intolerance, where the reaction is generally worse with the more that's been digested, a severe allergic reaction can happen just with a tiny amount, because it's how the body has responded to that particular food. Or it doesn't have to be food. There are you can be allergic to insect, vermin, medicines like I am, and latex. Yeah, so they're the main ones.
Yeah.
And I focus on the food allergies because with that, I just see there's lots of challenges with kind of people not understanding even things in terms of like how to prepare and handle food and hand washing. The cross-contamination risk for me is the scariest.
We're going to get onto that now. With my own daughter, egg was the main culprit. So I found myself finding it so difficult to find food that didn't contain egg. It took a while and we got there and we just went on a complete no egg policy, or no, we just didn't take any risk, as most parents, I'm sure, would also do. However, there are things that are appetizers egg-free, and you want them to have a taste of something, don't you? Sometimes you think, oh, you know, we'll buy that. Or dairy-free, oh, great, that's, phew, she can have this then. So what's been your experience in the area of quote-unquote foods that are free from or advertised as vegan? Have you had any experiences where it's not quite into what it seems?
This has happened. The knowledge that I have has been unfortunate, because we've had a very bad experience from it, and I wouldn't have known this beforehand. And again, it's something that's really worrying for anybody that's managing someone that has severe allergies. But vegan products, so vegan by definition means there's no animal products in there, so no meat, no milk, no egg. But the definition by the Vegan Society and the legal definition is that there's a guidance, and there's a minimal amount that can be in the product, and it's still allowed to be called vegan. So there can be traces. So for example, start looking at some vegan packaging, you might find that it says things like it's vegan on the front, but on the back, in really small letters, milk. And for me, that was just so dangerous and so shocking. And I feel like if you were to buy a veggie burger, and on the back it said may contain chicken or may contain beef, you would never expect to see that in that packaging. You would expect
that
veggie burger does not contain meat. And it's so dangerous. And it's not just vegan products, it's gluten products as well. So for people that have celiac disease, which is, they have to manage that in the same way as someone with a severe allergy. So no amount can be within that product. Again, with gluten, a minimal amount can still be in the product. And there isn't testing in the product to make sure that it is completely free from gluten. So it's really dangerous. Free from labelling and packaging is a big concern of mine and many others in the community, because it's so misleading. In fact, there is a young boy that died because his father bought him a chocolate bar. It was from Morrison's, and it was within the free from aisle, and the little boy was allergic to dairy. And on the packaging on the bar said, it said free from, and it said coconut milk chocolate bar. And so the dad thought it was made with coconut milk.
Coconut milk, yeah.
It was actually a milk chocolate bar with coconut flavouring. So he gave the chocolate bar to his little boy, and unfortunately the little boy didn't survive.
Oh, gosh.
And as a result, Morrison's took that product off the shelves. But unfortunately, it takes something like that to happen.
Someone's died, yeah. So it's just so...
And so my daughter, I had a similar experience. I mean, thankfully, she survived, but I gave her a vegan ice cream. Did not even think that there could be milk in there. And she had a very, very severe anaphylactic reaction to it, the worst that she's ever had. And it was it was so scary, because she had those symptoms that I had, and she couldn't breathe. She went unconscious. Her eyeballs were literally popping out of her head.
Goodness me.
It was terrifying, because I gave the EpiPen, thankfully it worked. But what goes through your mind at the time is you're just hoping that EpiPen is going to work, because if it doesn't, there's nothing else. You've got nothing else left.
Literally.
The ambulance took 20 minutes to arrive, so it's so important.
Oh, gosh.
You know, if anyone is ever in that situation, that they use the EpiPen and not wait. And there's research that shows that in situations where a child has experienced anaphylaxis, 80% of parents didn't use the EpiPen because they were scared, and they wanted a medical professional to do it. So it's so important that parents feel confident to be able to give the EpiPen, and not just parents, if they're in school, if they're in school,
yeah. Anyone that's in their care really should have an EpiPen. And going on with the EpiPen, when I was given mine, there are instructions, but it would be great, I think, if there was actual training.
Yeah.
You have to agree or sign that you understand how to use the EpiPen.
Yeah.
In case of an emergency, I think that would be definitely helpful. And we've been given two, obviously the school has as well, and one for home. But it's very important to know how to use it. You're so right. You have to use it sooner rather than later. And then you can use it again 5 or so minutes later. And it is a lifesaver. The paramedic, you know, it is a lifesaver. So thankfully you have that and I have that in my experience as well. But I can't imagine giving, you literally gave your child something that was advertised and as a dairy-free product. What happened next?
So, I mean, I contacted the manufacturer and I understandably really upset, and I explained what happened, and I asked for an investigation. And initially they'd said to me there's no chance of there being milk within the product because it's made on a separate line. Whilst it's made in the same factory, it's made on a separate line.
Mm-hmm.
I continued pushing and said no, there has to be something in that ice cream. It was definitely the ice cream that was given. It's definitely the ice cream that caused the reaction, and I want to know what was in there. And they came back a few days later and said the ice cream with milk in was made on the same line, and then once that batch had been completed, they started with the vegan ones. So there's definitely contamination that happened with that. And this is the dangerous thing when you're buying anything that's manufactured or when you're eating out in restaurants, is that all of the equipment and the area where the food is being prepared and made has to be cleaned with soap and water, and just being washed out with water alone doesn't remove the protein. And again, this is so dangerous, and this is what people don't realize. They might be buying a
product
itself, that the ingredients itself might be okay, but if it's come into contact with milk or nuts or whatever their allergen is, then it's not okay. And that's a really difficult thing to kind of explain,
to highlight and to bring to awareness. It's almost like a COVID situation, isn't it? Now that everyone thought they knew how to wash their hands before the pandemic hit, didn't they? And now we know that it's 20 seconds and on this, you know, there's certain ways to wash your hands and how many, and it's frequent hand washing and things like that. So it's, you know, something that the food industry, I don't know. So who can we contact, or do you have any relationships or with anyone in terms of food regulation, or is it just something that you're campaigning for? Or
I did contact the Food Standards Agency, and I also contacted, I've got contact in Parliament as well.
I knew you were the right person to have on this on the podcast. Yeah, so go on.
And with everything that's been going on with Brexit and COVID, this is obviously put to the bottom
of course the pile.
Mm-hmm. But it's something that is something I'm still working on behind the scenes, looking to get packaging to be regulated, because not only is packaging misleading, there are product recalls. So this happens on a almost daily basis, where you have big supermarkets and big food manufacturers that are recalling items because there are things like nuts contained in the product, but it's not declared on the label. And this is so, so dangerous. And it's just, you know, a matter of time before something very severe happens. And there is no regulation. You know, they will just recall the product and it, you know, it's okay, but it's not okay, because what if, you know, someone like your daughter was to eat that product and had no idea that there's nuts in there,
or be given it for a third party, like you say, at school, or they might think, oh, that's fine, you know, we really trust labels, don't we? And we shouldn't really have to question.
No,
but obviously we do. Yeah.
So even our snacks and things are cooked from scratch. And the other thing is that recipes do change as well, so you have to read the labels every single time. And it can just be really difficult to, you know, you can miss things on labels. The writing is so small, and when you're a busy mum and you've done a big supermarket shop, you've got kids running around, it's so easy to do. And we have a process where you know, two people will check. So my husband and I will both check the labels before giving the food.
Same. Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's like if you're counting a large amount of cash, you would get two people to check the money.
Yeah.
We have to take it so seriously. And my daughter did actually have, this happened at her preschool, where she was given a gravy and it was a may contain milk and egg. And the school had just missed that on the labelling, and she had a reaction. And, you know, the way I kind of approached, you know, they were absolutely devastated and mortified that, you know, this happened. And I was like, look, these things happen. You know, I've made mistakes as well. We're only human.
Yeah.
We just need to have a process in place to avoid those things from happening. So let's have a process of, it's checked at this point and at this point, and there's two people that check. And this is what I mean. This is why it is quite like draining, like day to day, because it's a layer of stuff that you need to check. And if you don't do it, it's not like, okay, I've run out, I've forgotten the kids' snacks, or I've forgotten their water, I'll just buy another one. This is, if I get it wrong, this consequences are so severe, I can't get it wrong. So it's a huge kind of weight, I suppose, that really what makes things easier for other people is if they can share that load with other people. So
yeah,
share it with your husband, share it with friends and family members, so that when you're out, for example, you've got extra pairs of eyes that are helping and watching, you know, things from happening, rather than it being you're constantly telling your friends, oh, please don't do that, oh, please let me check the label and give that to my daughter. And I'm so fortunate to be in a position where that is working for me. So my friends, you know, are the people that are watching out for my daughter, just as though, you know, she was their child. And it takes such a huge pressure and weight off my shoulders. And when we meet up, say, for example, like picnics in the summer, they would only bring snacks that was safe for Eva, so the kids could share, so that if Eva wanted to eat something someone else was eating, that's fine for her to do, and I don't have to worry and check, you know, I don't have to worry that Eva's feeling left out, or worry that someone's got something on their hand and they're going to touch her. And that just takes a huge weight off, and it makes that experience more enjoyable.
Definitely. And we here also have like a safe food list in terms of snacks for when our children go out as well. And fortunately, schools and primary schools now do tend to be allergen free, but dairy, not necessarily. So I can imagine you have to be really on red alert. For new mums, because you're like me as well, like yourself, I found out about my daughter's allergen at the weaning stage.
Yeah.
So you just don't have a clue prior to then. You don't even think.
No.
You know, you're oblivious completely. So what is there any kind of research in that area, or any advice that you can give for mums who have babies that they're now starting to potentially wean, have done all the kind of root vegetable things and want to introduce them to egg, fish, nuts, etc.?
Yeah, completely agree with you. I was so shocked. I just didn't think that such a severe reaction could happen to a baby. So Eva was 8 months old and she went into anaphylactic shock, and I was just like, how did I not know that this was a possibility, that this could happen from food? And I didn't have any Pyrantin, I didn't have anything. Obviously I knew what was happening and I called an ambulance. I just want to make a point that it's not that common for this to happen. It's happened to me, and I know it's happened to you, but 1 in 13 children do have an allergy, so we do need to talk about it, and we do need to make sure that parents, mums, dads are aware of the signs. If your child has eczema, they're at more of a risk of having food allergies. So that's the first thing to kind of be conscious of before you start weaning. So if, you know, the first 6 months they've had broken skin and eczema, there's a link with that to having an egg allergy and a peanut allergy. So I would speak to your GP and ask for an appointment to have maybe allergy tests, because they do say not to introduce peanut early if you have got eczema, if your child has got eczema. If You know, if they've had symptoms, so I don't know about your child, but my daughter did have symptoms of things like reflux.
Yeah.
If your baby is having symptoms where they've got some kind of issues with like drinking milk, then possibly that might alert you to they might have food allergies. So just to be aware when you are weaning that you're being prepared. And when with foods as well, often, and this has happened with my daughter with some of the food she's allergic to, the reaction happened on the second time that she ate the food. So often the reaction won't appear on the first time, but it will appear on the second time they've eaten the food. So just introduce that food really slowly, you know, and introduce the food four times before you start introducing new food. So just take the process really, really slowly. I did baby-led weaning, which encourages the baby to kind of touch and play with the food. So things like that, where they may have touched food. If they have a rash, particularly around their face, or hives, which is like a bumpy rash, it's like white spots that are red on the skin with redness around it. That's that will alert you to that. Okay, my child has an allergy to that food, and I would then stop and not give any more of that food, and don't repeat that. Don't repeat giving that food to your baby. I would speak to your GP and ask for a referral to allergy tests, because the second time you give that food, they could experience a very, very severe reaction.
Mm-hmm.
If, for example, they do have anaphylaxis like our kids did, the symptoms of that are that they're having difficulty breathing and they are losing consciousness. So they might be like really hot and clammy. They might be start going limp and floppy.
Drowsy. Yeah.
And that's very, very dangerous. And you need to call for an ambulance, and you must
say,
they're having an allergic reaction, so that it's high priority. But if it's a baby and they're going unconscious, they will come to you very quickly. And call 999. Don't call the 111 number, which is what
Is that what you did? Obviously, yeah.
In the panic, it was like, oh my god, I don't know what to do. And it is a very scary, panicky time. But luckily, the ambulance came within 2 minutes.
Brilliant.
If they do get if they do have hives, that's a definite allergy. So go to your GP as soon as you can get an appointment and discuss that with them, because there might be other foods that they're allergic to. They don't advise giving Pyrrhotin under the age of one, but we were prescribed Pyrrhotin because of her reaction. And mm-hmm. I was told to just continue weaning as normal, avoiding milk and dairy. But she was allergic to so many things. And I would sit there with my bottle of Pyrrhotin, absolutely terrified.
Literally, yeah.
Trying these foods. And she was due to go to nursery at the age of one, so I had to try all the foods with her, with me, before going to nursery, so I could let them know
what
I couldn't have. I didn't want her having a reaction there. So it was so scary.
It's scary and it is stressful, and it's great that you're sharing this knowledge, and I've shared on the previous episode, and we're going to do another one because we just want to raise more awareness, and what you don't know, you just don't know.
Yeah.
I was also told not to buy Pyrrhotin. When I was buying Pyrrhotin, I was asked how old my daughter was, or my child was at the time, and I refused, but I still went and got it from somewhere else.
Yeah.
Because people see it as, you know, you're not supposed to give it to them. But if you are in a house, and God forbid this kind of thing happens, you do need to have that as well. Or that is in your best interest to have that. We've also got cesarotine now. I don't know if you use that or you have that in your house as well. Probably not pronouncing it right. It's not really good medicine. But we do have a medicine that is the non-drowsy, because Pyrrhotin does make anyone who takes it more drowsy, and that can be equally scary when that's mixed with an anaphylactic shock.
Yeah, I think that one of the things also the point I want to make is that for example, you have been given you have got EpiPens and you know that your child is going into anaphylaxis, then you need to skip giving the antihistamine and go straight for
the juggler. Mm-hmm.
Don't wait for the Pyrrhotin to work and kick in, because it's at that point, you're racing against time, and the only thing that's going to help in that situation is the adrenaline and the EpiPen. And where things have gone wrong with this in the past, particularly in schools, is where the nurse has given the Pyrantel and then given an inhaler where there's been struggling, the child was struggling to breathe, but they're in anaphylaxis and neither of those things are going to help. And they did, you know, they delayed giving the EpiPen. So in that situation, you would need to give the EpiPen straight away and then give the inhaler. But what's happening to your body is that the airways are closing, and that's why you need to give the adrenaline
straight away. And there needs to be more awareness or more talk about that, I think, just the importance of the EpiPen. It is a lifesaver.
Yeah.
And should be used first and foremost. So in terms of just your top three confidence boosting tips for mums with children with allergies, you spoke about gradual weaning, and I think that's a great tip. So anything that you want to highlight as three main things?
As a new mum, a lot of mums, regardless, their confidence is affected because it's such a huge change to your lifestyle of having a child. They don't come with a manual, so you're constantly kind of, you know, maybe second guessing yourself and thinking, am I not doing the right thing? You've got everybody and his wife trying to give you advice on what you should be doing, and I think just trust your instincts. And as a mum, you know your child, you know your child best, and don't let any doctors or teachers, you know, try and kind of talk you out of maybe symptoms that you have experienced or seen. You know, you know your child best, so you need to kind of stand your ground. And having something like a diary which records which has recorded any reactions and kind of what your baby's going through will really help those conversations that you have with the doctors. And also just remember that doctors, this is new to them as well, and they don't have learning and the training and the experience. You know, it takes a long time for that to filter through. And what we know is in the allergy community, we know actually a lot more information than what like the medical professionals know. So that's what I'm saying is really trust yourself, trust your gut instinct, and really push. If you're not happy with an answer or a response that you've been given, because a lot of parents are turned away and said, no, it's not an allergy, it's something else, and you know, or they're not given EpiPen, or whatever it is, you know, just fight for your child, or whether it's yourself that's got the allergy, you know, just stand your ground and someone else is going to do it for you, so you've got to look out for yourself.
I say better to be wrong than, you know.
Yeah, I think a part of, you know, I don't know what it's like in other countries, but a huge, like, you know, thing about being British is that we have this, we don't want to cause a fuss, or we don't want to be inconvenience. And so we don't communicate our needs, because we're kind of brought up to be told that, you know, you go with what the majority want to do. But when it comes to allergies, and advocating for yourself or for your child, there isn't another option. There isn't another way. It's kind of, well, it has to be this way or my child's going to die. So, you know, you don't have to say it in like, you know, a nasty way that you're getting your way all the time, but you have to be, you know, you just have to start advocating and standing up for your child and just having really strong boundaries. So, you know, for example, if you're having problems with particular friends or family that aren't understanding, then you say, well, I'm not going to come to this event because, you know, it's too dangerous for my child to be around, you know, all the food that you have out. And that, you know, having those strong boundaries, sticking up for yourself and advocating. And what you'll start to see, well, this is what's happened to me and lots of others that I know in the community, is when you start feeling confident about communicating your needs, you can start to do it with, you know, in other areas of your life too. So it might be at work or in other relationships. Yeah. Just kind of start going, actually, no, this is what I need right now, and I'm going to talk about it. And you'll find that once people understand, you know, majority of people aren't nasty people, and once you tell them, you know, they will want to help. And you know, my friends have been asking me what sweets can Eva have, you know, and we want to give her some sweets for Halloween, and they know, they check with me, and you know, once they know, it just makes that relationship a lot easier. So don't worry about being an inconvenience or mm-hmm. you know, really do that. And then I would say become an expert in your child's allergy. And I think for me as well, like, knowledge is power. And mm-hmm. when you have people that may be sort of questioning you about, you know, is it really that serious, or I don't know what they might be saying, but when you have all the facts and information, you're in a power of, you will be more confident in talking about your child's allergy, and you will know, you know, this what needs to happen. And this does happen over time. So I didn't know how serious my daughter's allergies were. It's every time she's had a reaction, I've known, okay, well, now we know.
You've just gained a bit more information with each.
Exactly.
Unfortunate incident. Yeah. And you do feel empowered when you know what you're talking about and yeah. you've had the experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think some parents, and I get this actually from a lot of parents, is that they don't feel confident in talking to the schools. Mm-hmm. A little bit of intimidation from the head teacher. And I think it might stem down
to
they were at school and, you know, the position of authority, and they feel like, well, what the teacher says goes. But, you know, really, you know, don't be intimidated by the teachers. At the end of the day, you've got to stick up for your child, because no one else is, you know, they need you. They can't do that. They're too young.
I guess that's where an organisation like yours, what you've created, tell us just a bit more about your community food allergy fit, and where can people find out more about what you're doing?
Yeah, you know, I found that there was just no support, absolutely no support. So I didn't know, I was never, like you, told ever how to use an EpiPen. And it's so dangerous. You know, I was told, oh, don't worry, you'll never have to, you know, use one. And unfortunately, there are parents that have lost their children. They say they were never told how to use an EpiPen. They didn't know what signs to look out for. And they don't want this to ever happen to anyone else's child. Now, I don't want this to happen to my child or anyone else's child. And so I set up a training program which talks to parents and grandparents and babysitters, whoever you want to bring along with you. And I take you through all of this. I talk about the seriousness of food allergies, the symptoms of anaphylaxis and what to look out for, how to use the EpiPen. And I'm a first aid trainer. So I take you through using an EpiPen and then CPR and using a defibrillator. So it's a proper first aid course. And then I also have a community. So I have an online community. And this was developed over COVID, because before it was a local community. So I've got an online community, and I have people from America, Australia, Europe coming to my meetups, which is amazing. And it just having that support from people that are in the same shoes as you are, who really understand mm-hmm. it, who have, you know, maybe been there, done there, and can support you. Is just, for me, it's been life-changing. And for other people, just having that support, because there is the constant doubt from the doctors, like, are you sure that, you know, this is actually happening? Your friends and family, who, they're not thinking about it all the time, and they might forget.
And it can be quite isolating if you're the only one in your friendship group and everyone else's child is fine, they can eat whatever they want.
Yep.
And you're the parent yeah. that has a child that has an issue. It's like, oh gosh, we can't invite her. Or we have to be a tiptoe around, you know, God, you shouldn't be in that situation. I haven't experienced any negativity around my daughter's allergy, but some people may well be. So a community, which is why I reached out to you, and which is why I'm going to be joining your next online, whatever it is that we're going to be doing. We'll talk about that after. But it's definitely important to me as a parent now to be in the community for the exact reasons that you've highlighted. So where can people actually find you and your community?
Okay, so you can contact me through Instagram. If you're on Instagram, I'm Food Allergy Fit on Instagram. You can contact me from my website. You can sign up to my support group from my website as well.
Okay.
And you can sign up for my newsletters. So I send lots of information in my newsletters. They go out weekly. So they're things from like recipes to kind of allergy tips to all mm-hmm. sorts of things. And I've got an online course, but I do one-to-one consultations as well. And I'm working with schools and working with parents to develop a care plan for schools.
Amazing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
you know, it's just that support from somebody else that's not kind of emotionally involved, but really talk from a knowledgeable point with the teachers at the schools. And we go through a risk management process. So we look at all of the potential hazards that could cause an allergic reaction, and we go through them point by point to make sure that we're happy with how they would be mitigated. So it's just going through all of those things, because it is such a scary time for parents to be handing over their most precious thing, and somebody else will be looking after them. It's a really, really scary time for parents. And as we know that schools and teachers, they don't have anyone either to turn to for information. So even if they wanted to, there is a lack of resource available to them to be given that information.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, any last comments?
It is a really scary, when you think, I can't quite get my head around how can a piece of food cause that kind of reaction that can kill my daughter, and it can happen within minutes. So it's really normal to feel anxious or worried and scared. It's completely normal. And, you know, the good thing about the support group is that, you know, it's a place where your feelings are validated. And sometimes people can say to you things like, oh, don't worry, your child might grow out of it.
Yeah, that's what I was told. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, don't worry. She'll
dismissive. Yeah. And they don't necessarily mean it in a bad way. It's just, we've heard about these, and people tend to outgrow them by age 3 or 4.
And you're exactly right. It's being dismissive, and it's not a kind of a being allowed to express your feelings. And really what you want is to just kind of talk about it, and for someone to say, yeah, totally get it. That's I completely understand how you might be feeling. And that, again, just takes a bit of a weight and a load off. But if you really are struggling and it is something that is, you know, debilitating, and you think, actually, I need to speak to someone, then definitely I would say get help. A lot of people, that there's such a high proportion of parents and children that have anxiety because of food allergies, and that is completely normal. And I would just say, you know, reach out for help, reach out for education and knowledge on the subject, because whilst it is scary to think about what might happen, you're in a better position to be able to react if something does happen, and you're in a better position to educate and explain to other people. And if you, as an allergy parent, you're telling one person or two people, and then they carry on telling, that's how that's how we'll
awareness.
Up mm-hmm. this awareness. It's not just, you know, it's not just from like one person kind of doing this. It's as a parent, that with it comes responsibility.
That's absolutely great. I knew you were a perfect person for this episode. Your passion is obvious, and it comes across, and that's what's needed, because it is a serious matter. You know, we can have a laugh in a chat and discuss it, but when, you know, we've both been in that situation where it's been like, literally, oh my goodness, how could this be, and why is it not highlighted more urgently prior to it happening? You know, surely prevention is better than cure. So we're working from being cured and then working backwards and then investigating. And as you said, allergies, they increase. You know, one minute it's just an egg allergy, then it can be egg nuts, and it's egg nuts and fish. You know, oh my God, you know, there's all these changes that happen. So there's a lot of work to do. I think the work you're doing is brilliant. And I want to encourage anyone that's listening in who has a child with allergies to check out your page and your website at Food Allergy Fit. And or if you know anyone else that this could be of benefit to, then pass on this information. And Manpreet, she's very responsive on Instagram. She's great to, obviously, as you can tell, she's very communicative and just a really great advocate for this really important subject. So thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much. Pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you again for tuning in. If this episode helped you in any way, please share so more mums can find the podcast and benefit from the information on today's show. Please also subscribe and review the podcast. It will be greatly appreciated and really keep me encouraged. Till the next episode, remember that you are the best mum for your children, and I know you're doing an amazing job. So be kind and patient with yourselves. See you soon.